This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The other day in the New York Times, on the occasion of St. Patrick's Day, an Irish journalist contributed a piece called, I believe, Green Beer and Rank Hypocrisy. And it was on the subject of Irish identity and how that has so radically been transformed in the last 100 years or so. And he recounted how the Irish in the 19th century and into this century, when they tried to immigrate to America, were considered to be completely undesirable human trash, that the language used to describe them was both kind of racist and treating them as somehow completely separate from the white Anglo-Saxon English founders of this country, in large part because they were papists and the Catholic Church was considered about as safe and reliable then as Islam is now. And that the Irish arrived here under a cloud of great opprobrium with nothing, and yet over the course of generations managed to settle here and lo and behold transform themselves into a part of a new establishment, so that they now consider themselves real Americans and are part of the chorus of voices trying to keep America safe from outsiders and immigrants. And so this author was bemoaning the complete lack of acknowledgement of their own history and the hypocrisy involved in that. See, I think it's part of a bigger picture of the problem of reversals. The Irish went through a process where they went from being the outsiders to the insiders. And once they're the insiders, they want to keep the outsiders out. There was similarly a quote that I probably picked up a long time ago from an equally reliable sort of New York Times op-ed source like David Brooks or somebody, that attributed to de Tocqueville the line that it's the dream of every slave not to have freedom but to have a slave of his own. I've never been able to find the source of that. I tried Googling it again this morning and couldn't find it, but it's a great quote. And again, it's about this problem of reversal. When you're down, what you want to do is get on top. Okay? Even if that means now somebody else is going to be down. The whole dilemma of the master-slave relationship you know, is discussed in depth, you know, by Hegel, where his crucial insight was that for there to be any development or progress in history, you can't just go through these endless cycles of reversal. Masters having slaves who revolt and become the masters in turn of a new set of slaves and so on forever. And that certainly happens. But for there to be any kind of historical process, you have to have a dialectic where a third position opens up. A third position, not just master or slave. And, you know, one version of a third position is the worker, where the unlike a slave, they have agency and control over the product of their work. Now, all this is relevant to us here, precisely to the extent that it engages this question of identity. And identity built on opposing binaries. And these binaries in practice take the form of have or have not. Certainly the most basic kind of binary that Buddhism creates is between delusion and enlightenment. You know, and Dogen talks about that. It basically, he says, from the perspective of ordinary people, there's delusion and enlightenment. But from the perspective of the sage, there's just life as it is. There's everything possessing the same Buddha nature. It's very tempting in practice, again, to sort of use practice as something we imagine is going to flip a binary that now is not in our favor to one that will be, right? That one where we start by thinking, there's something wrong with us, there's something lacking, there's something I haven't got, and I'm going to switch into the other position where I'm going to have it, and I'm going to be the guy who knows. And so there's a great fetishization about a state of enlightenment, which is going to be the opposite of this state that I'm trying to get out of. And it is an opposite, but it's an opposite the way Hegel's third position in the dialectic is an opposite. It's not a reversal of have not to have, but something that stands apart from or above this whole dichotomy of have and have not. In our discussion group, the transmission of the lamp, after a very long journey, we are finally reaching China, and today we will be discussing Bodhidharma. And he's a very fitting character to discuss in light of this kind of problem of identity and having not. Because Bodhidharma, when he arrives in China, you know, you can imagine this old immigrant getting off a boat that he's supposed to have been on for 3 years before he lands, you know, in China. And he's nobody and has nothing. But somehow, by some version of a reputation, he gets invited to have an audience with the emperor. Right, I mean, this ought to be the immigrant dream, right, or the missionary's dream, that instead of being a nobody, suddenly you're summoned to court and you have a chance to make this big impression and transform through your influence on the emperor, a whole country. And yet Bodhidharma refuses that reversal. He refuses the opportunity to go from being nobody to being somebody. And when the emperor, frustrated with him in all of this, asks him who he is, he says, "I don't know." He refuses any kind of identity. Right? Now, that's a very, very hard position to attain or maintain. And I think that all of us, as we practice, have to watch and see what kind of identity we create for ourselves as Buddhists or Zen students or the people in the know. Joko called one of her books Nothing Special. And I think it was very important to her, particularly in that generation where many of her fellow Dharma heirs were preoccupied with being very special indeed and setting themselves up as the new Bodhidharmas in the West, you know, establishing authentic practice here in America for the first time. Joko instead said what she was doing was nothing special. Okay? It's a different kind of position. She didn't say, "No, all those people are wrong and I've got the real thing." It's much more that she wanted to get out of that whole framework about having and not having or being the real thing or not. This is why she put that line in our verse where she says, life as it is, the only teacher, right? Life undifferentiated into I've got it or I'm lacking it, right? That's the teacher, right? Not a person who has now got it, right? That's not what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to go from being the student who doesn't have it to becoming a teacher who does have it, right? We're trying to become with life, one with life, for whom the distinction makes no difference.